It's time for Inside Silicon Valley, a look at issues affecting Silicon Valley. Now here's your host, Russell Hancock, President and CEO of Joint Venture Silicon Valley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. This is Inside Silicon Valley. I'm your host, Russell Hancock. We're so glad that you've joined us. This is a program where we talk about Silicon Valley. We talk about it in all of its many facets, the problems that we face, our trends, our challenges. Today, we're going to talk about what you might consider a central issue. The issue, of course, is tax. We all pay tax. We need tax revenues if we ever expect to have city services, government services at any level of government. So the subject today is going to be tax. Our hope is that in this hour, we will come to understand the tax system, the way it works in the state of California, and the way that taxes are collected here in our own county, Santa Clara County. So our guest in studio today is the tax man himself, Larry Stone. Larry, thanks for joining us.
For inviting me.
I'm looking forward to the conversation. Larry Stone is a guy that gets hissed every time he walks into a room. It's always such a kick in Rotary. Larry, to hear you roundly hissed every time, and that's because you play this crucial role in our county. By the way, I got my envelope in the mail last week. Thank you very much.
You know, I get those same bills, you know.
I'm sure that you do. The role that you play is that of Santa Clara County Assessor. So I would like to begin by having you explain to our listeners your job function and how you carry it out.
Well, the county assessor is responsible for determining the assessed value of all real and business personal property in Santa Clara County. So we have about 465,000 parcels, mm-hmm. plus about 30,000 businesses that pay property tax on business personal property. That's mm-hmm. machinery, equipment, computers, and fixtures, things like that. So not only bricks and mortar, mm-hmm. you know, residential, commercial, and industrial mm-hmm. buildings, mm-hmm. but also business personal property is assessable and therefore mm-hmm. taxable. Mm-hmm. We generate a little less than $4 billion worth of property tax revenue a year. Mm-hmm. The total assessed value of all real and business personal property as of July 1st, when we close the assessment roll, is $300
billion. $300 billion in Santa Clara County.
That's the value of all real and business personal property as of January 1st of this year, mm-hmm. Assessed, closed the assessment roll of July 1st of $300 billion. So that generates, you know, a substantial amount of money. Mm-hmm. Property tax is not the largest source of tax revenue, but it's the most stable. And it's the largest source of discretionary revenue that local government has. And local government, I mean by cities, mm-hmm. the county itself, mm-hmm. school districts, special districts, redevelopment agencies, and so forth are all part, and community colleges are all part of the property tax system.
Okay. So let's help our listeners understand this in very basic terms. You own a house. Your house gets taxed on the basis of its assessed value. Are we okay so far?
Yes.
Okay, so that's how it works. So explain how the assessment process actually works. How does your house get assessed?
Well, let's start from the beginning.
Please.
The assessor learns mm-hmm. about a transaction mm-hmm. through two ways. A deed,
yes.
which means there's some kind of change of ownership, mm-hmm. change of title, or a building permit. Mm-hmm. Something is built or added onto. Mm-hmm. And so then we value that. Usually, but not always, the assessed value of a property that's changed hands, where there's a change of ownership, mm-hmm. is generally the purchase price, but not always. If it's not an arm's length transaction, willing buyer, willing seller, the assessor is required by state law to assess all property at its fair market value. Mm-hmm. So if you buy a property for less than the fair market value, we'll assess it at its fair market value. So that's a very important point, because most people think it's always the purchase price.
Uh-huh.
And then that establishes a base year value. Mm-hmm. And according to Proposition 13, that assessed value can only go up at no more than 2% per year until there's another change of ownership or any kind of new construction.
And so when there's a change of ownership, then it's reassessed?
Reassessed at at market value.
At market value.
So the longer you own the property, mm-hmm. the greater the property tax benefit you get, mm-hmm. because your property can only, the assessment on your property can only go up at 2%, where the market may drive it, as we knew during the dot-com boom, 8, 10, 12, 15% a year. Mm-hmm. So that's why you have this tremendous disparity between the assessed value of property that's owned by people for a long period of time and the new home buyer.
Okay. So forgive some boneheaded questions, but I don't understand all of this stuff, and I bet our listeners, not all of them understand it either. I'm imagining that there's a guy that comes around, an assessor. He stands and looks at your house and figures out what his value is. But it's probably more complicated than that.
Well, for standard stock residential homes, we oftentimes don't have to visit the property, because we look at comps in the neighborhood,
right.
and we compare the per square foot value of comparable sales within the neighborhood with that. So oftentimes that appraisal, if you will, is done by computer.
Right.
Obviously, we can't do that for commercial and industrial properties, office buildings, shopping centers, those kinds of things, because they're not alike. Mm-hmm. Comparable sales in those on those types of properties are important, but they're not the only thing. Mm-hmm. The value of a commercial and industrial property is based upon the income it generates. The more income, the higher the value. So we look at rent rolls. We look at rents paid. We look at comparable sales per square foot of other types of properties, even though they may not be comparable at all in their size or their type.
Mm-hmm. Good. So here's another goofy question. If you're taxed on the basis of your value, it sort of sends a funny incentive out there. It's a disincentive to improve your property. Is that a problem from a policy point of view?
Well, it's a disincentive from a tax point of view, but understand Proposition 13 provides that the tax rate is only 1% of the total assessed value.
Right.
So for every dollar you increase the value, you only have to pay 1% for the property tax, but you get 99 cents in increased value.
Yes.
And if people buy real estate, maybe other than residential, for its investment value, then of course, if you can improve the value of your property, you get 99% increase in equity, if you will, for 1% that you have to pay in property tax.
Well, there was no way we were going to have a radio program about tax with Larry Stone without talking about Proposition 13. In fact, you could say that's a front and center issue for certainly for you and your business. So would you take a moment and talk about Prop 13?
Yeah, Prop 13 passed for a very legitimate reason in 1978, and that was residential property values were increasing at such a rapid rate. And in those days, the various governmental agencies set the tax rate. So every city council, every county, every school board, every redevelopment agency set the tax rate for themselves. Proposition 13, and so people were literally, mostly people on fixed income, was being taxed from their homes, literally. The, the assessed value of residential property in California had gone up 70% in 3 years before Proposition 13. So the people were upset by this because those of us, and I was a mayor and a council member during those days, weren't reducing the tax rate to reflect the tremendous increase in appreciation. And so Howard Jarvis and Paul Gann came along and put a stop to that with Proposition 13, which passed overwhelmingly.
Yes, it did.
Mainly because of anger on the part of the taxpayers. And so they established statewide that your tax rate is 1% of the assessed value. So no longer did city councils or schools or whatever be able to set the tax rate. They also said that the increase can increase the increase in assessed value can go up no more than 2% a year, and also that any local taxes that people voted to increase their taxes for their schools or for their city or whatever had to have a 2/3 vote in order to be effective. So that's basically the three main components of Proposition 13.
And yet there was something else that happened significant. Would you tell our listeners about that? It shifted power in an important way to Sacramento and away from local government.
No longer could local government determine what tax rate they were going to have, what revenue they needed. And so the power over local government shifted dramatically to Sacramento, to the state government. And of course, so we have less, far less local control today over what happens in our own communities, whether it's schools or cities or special districts or whatever. Much of that power rests in Sacramento. So you see, when people want to impact things, they now go to the ballot box through an initiative in order to force the state to do certain kinds of things, which again leaves local government out of a lot of the decision-making process.
So 1978 was profound. It it profoundly shifted the locus of power and authority in our state. Would you say that voters understood that at the time?
I don't believe voters understood the long-term ramifications. I'm not sure any of us did of Proposition 13. I can say this, that property tax revenue almost overnight dropped about 60% for local governments. Any well-run government at that time, because of the tremendous inflation and increase in property values that occurred prior to Proposition 13, any well-run government could have sustained that 60% reduction. The two difficult parts about Proposition 13 is the 2% cap. Your assessment cannot go up any more than 2% a year unless there's a change of ownership or new construction. Well, that has no relationship to anything. It's very arbitrary. If you assume the cost of government services goes up at least at the rate of inflation, then a better solution, I think, would have been your property assessment can go up no more than 75% of the California Consumer Price Index or something like that, where it was related to the cost of services. Since Proposition 13 passed, we've had inflation rates in California as high as 13%, and unbelievably, last year it was negative. It was below zero. So, and the other thing is the two-thirds vote has been very inhibiting on people being able to vote to increase their taxes locally for schools or whatever. So those are the two difficult parts of Proposition 13. And of course, the 1% statewide means that the state has much more control over local services or lack thereof. Than the local government does. We expect a lot of our city councils and mayors and boards of supervisors, but they don't have a lot of influence. And of course, about less than 25% of the state budget does the legislature have control over. So you send these people, you elect them to go to the state legislature, and they only have a control over about 20% of what is spent there.
The rest accounted for, of course, by various initiatives, propositions that have been enacted into law. And so the budget has already been legislated.
Yeah, we have initiatives that don't increase revenue.
Right.
They simply lock up a certain portion of the revenue for something that exists for as long as that constitutional amendment sits. So the people we expect to be able to do something in Sacramento really don't have control over much of what they have to do in the budget and financial area.
Larry, I promise we're not going to spend the whole hour talking about Prop 13, but since we're on the subject, let's stay with it a few more minutes. It's always referred to as the third rail of California politics. You cannot touch it. And yet, any rational conversation surfaces these issues that are profound and have ramifications for our state that we need to grapple with, especially in a difficult fiscal environment. So how can we change this dynamic and actually begin a conversation about Prop 13 and what reforms there might be available to us?
Well, from a residential property owner's point of view, I think Prop 13 is the third rail of California politics. And the basic support for Proposition 13, 35 years after it passed, is its predictability. The problem with the environment before Proposition 13 passed was that you were totally at the mercy of the market. So property owners couldn't predict in any reasonable form what their property tax might be. So the attraction of Proposition 13 for all property owners, but primarily residential property owners, is that it's predictability.
Yes.
You know that it's not going to go up more than 2% unless you change ownership or have new construction. There is a move. It circles around about every 5 years, but I think it's having much more discussion today because of the budget crisis in Sacramento. what they call a split role, where you assess and therefore tax commercial and industrial properties at differently mm-hmm. than you do residential properties. Mm-hmm. That you would reassess to market value all commercial and industrial properties every 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And that seems to have more discussion in Sacramento today than it has in the past. Mm. The problem with that is that assessors don't have the staff or the skill set to the skill set of appraisal. The appraisal industry has been going downhill since the SNL debacle in the early 1990s.
Really?
So the skill set of mm-hmm. certified, experienced appraisers that have the ability to appraise mm-hmm. commercial and industrial properties, which is much different than tract residential homes, mm-hmm. simply doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So the Assessors Association, the California Assessors Association, of which I'm an active member, mm-hmm. has said, we don't get involved in whether we need more revenue or not. Mm-hmm. Assessors don't want to be perceived as revenue agents for local government. Right. But we can tell you if we can implement. And the Assessors Association says, we do not have the staff, the resources, or the skill set doesn't exist in the marketplace for us to reassess to market value all commercial and industrial properties mm-hmm. every 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there's another solution that we don't necessarily support because we don't get involved in revenue issues.
Right.
And simply change the tax rate. Uh-huh. In other words, the tax rate for all property now in the statewide is 1%. Mm-hmm. You could change the tax rate for commercial and industrial properties to 1.5% or something like that. That would be relatively easy to implement. The problem with it is that it doesn't solve all of the inequities of Proposition 13, mm. where you can have two houses on the same street, the same model. Mm-hmm. One was purchased last year and one's owned for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And the difference in the assessed value and therefore the property tax paid could be as high as 10 times for one house versus another. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very unfair system, but it's one that's widely supported, at least if you believe the polls, mm-hmm. Because it's predictable.
Mm. You're listening to Larry Stone. He's the Santa Clara County Assessor. I'm Russell Hancock, your host. This is Inside Silicon Valley, and on our program today, we're having a wide-ranging conversation about tax, how it's collected, how property's assessed, and how your tax dollars are processed as they go to work on government services. So stay right where you are. We're going to take a break. Don't touch your dial. This is KLIV 1590, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Larry Stone. Welcome back. This is Inside Silicon Valley, and our guest today is Larry Stone, the Santa Clara County Assessor. Larry, we spent the first segment talking all about taxes and Prop 13, but before we continue, you do other things as well. You lead a very interesting life. It includes, I know, baseball, which is a passion of yours, and you're part of this effort to bring the Oakland A's into San Jose. How's that going?
Well, we're at a stalemate right now. You know, I've been working on bringing Major League Sports to Santa Clara County for about 25 years, so yes. You can see how successful I am. The only one I didn't work on was the Sharks, so and that's the one we have. No, I believe that to be a major metropolitan area, mm-hmm. you need many things. You need a symphony and a ballet, a good, vibrant downtown and so forth. And yeah. Major League Sports, mm-hmm. whether it's football or basketball or baseball, is part of what makes a vibrant, nice place to live and work valley. So we have an opportunity. The Oakland A's are failing in Oakland, mm-hmm. And we have an opportunity to move them to a new ballpark in downtown San Jose. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that when the Giants – I worked on bringing the Giants down to Santa Clara County yes. back in the early and then mid-90s, and mm-hmm. our ballot measure failed. Mm-hmm. But at that time, the Giants were awarded exclusive territorial rights to Santa Clara County. And ironically, the Oakland A's approved granting those rights. Mm-hmm. They didn't condition it on the success of a ballot measure, which failed. Mm-hmm. So what should have been temporary territorial rights became permanent territorial rights, and that's our roadblock right now. Mm-hmm. But the Giants' business objective is to keep the A's in Oakland, mm-hmm. where they are failing mm-hmm. and will fail, and then they'll have to sell the team or move the team. Mm-hmm. and then they'll control the entire market. So the Giants' motive here is all about market share. It has nothing to do with baseball per se. That just happens to be the product.
Right.
And so they want to control the entire market. I think, you know, if you look at what how successful the Sharks have been, you know, over the years, they've done more for the identity of San Jose than all the market development programs that the city has done in its history.
It's true.
And baseball plays twice as many games. Mm-hmm. To have a ballpark in downtown San Jose like they have in San Diego, like they have in Pittsburgh, like they have in Denver, like Seattle. I mean, you know, we're the oldest multi-purpose stadium, the only multi-purpose stadium for football and baseball in the entire league right now, in either football or baseball. So it's doable. It's financeable. The polling we've done is fantastic. It will pass a ballot measure, which is required by the city charter. I believe it will pass overwhelmingly. But the problem is the territorial rights. And the commissioner of Major League Baseball has been unresponsive to the city's request from the mayor, from other community and civic and business leaders to allow the membership. One is there has to be a vote of the people in San Jose for this to happen, but also 75% of the owners of the major league teams has to vote to allow the A's to negotiate with San Jose. But the vote is called by the commissioner of Major League Baseball, and he has been reluctant to do that. We're hoping in the next few weeks, if not the next few months, that he will allow that vote to occur. If 75% of the owners vote to do that, to allow that, which I think they will, then we can have a vote, and we can have a baseball team here in about 3 years.
So, Bud Selig, if you're listening, we want to vote, and we want it now.
All we want is the opportunity to present this to the voters.
Of course.
And people say, well, why would the owners allow this? Well, right now, there's a revenue-sharing agreement within Major League Baseball. And because the A's are an underperforming franchise, meaning they don't have the fan base that most places have, Major League Baseball pays the A's $35 million a year in revenue sharing right now. The A's in a new ballpark in San Jose, by all accounts, would be a contributor to that revenue sharing fund, not a recipient. The owners, when they come to play in Oakland, they'd rather play before a full house in San Jose than 8,000 people on a Tuesday night in Oakland.
Of course.
And, of course, owners don't want to tell another owner that they can't move when they're having difficult financial problems, as the A's are having, because someday they may want to move and they don't want to have the owners tell them they can't move.
Right.
So there's all kinds of good reasons why the membership the owners would support this, but the vote is called, the rules call for the vote to be called by the commissioner, and he's been reluctant to do so for whatever reason.
Well, when they build that stadium, you'll have a lot of fun assessing its value, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, not only the value, but the fan base and the increase in businesses and all that kind of stuff. A lot out of that stuff is assessable.
Yes. So of course. So back to tax and back to assessment. Larry, tell our listeners, how big is your office? How many assessors do you employ? How many staff otherwise do you employ? And what's your budget?
Well, I have 243 people that work for me and about a $29 million budget. And most of the time when I say that, people say, wow, why do you need so much staff and money for?
Well,
Don't we have Proposition 13 that just says that everything would be indexed up by no more than 2% a year?
Right.
Well, about half of that staff are what we call certified professionals. They're certified auditors by the state of California or certified appraisers. And so we process about 75,000 deeds a year, about 28,000 to 30,000 building permits come through our office, and many of which are require reassessable events. Normally, unless it's a standard tract home, we need to have every property appraised before we value it. And, of course, that requires appraisers to go out into the field. We process exemptions for universities, for churches, for things like that. I don't know how many, probably 10,000 of those or so. So there's a lot of things that go through the office each year. We do, you know, thousands of appraisals and then just assembling the assessment roll. Every company that has more than $400,000 worth of assets located in Santa Clara County, and this is Silicon Valley, so $400,000 is not a lot of value, mm-hmm. must be audited on site every 4 years. Mm-hmm. And if the company is headquartered out of state, then we send auditors out of state to audit them. So we do about 1,000 to 1,200 audits of major corporations every year. So you're beginning to get a feel for the volume of business that goes through that. 28,000 changes of ownership or building permits, these kinds of things that have to be assessed. This, I'll give you a shameless promotion here.
Okay, go ahead.
The assessment role is risen. Increased in the 16 years that I've been the assessor from $115 billion to what I told you before, $300 billion. Mm-hmm. I have 2% fewer employees that work for me today than the day I took office on January 1st, 1995. So the assessment role is nearly tripled, mm-hmm. and I have fewer employees dealing with that today mm-hmm. than I had when I took office 16 years ago.
Hopefully you cope with some of that because there's computerized tools available, software and others. And yet you have a headache. You need to hire people.
Well, we've done a lot of that through mm-hmm. technology. There's no question about it. Mm-hmm. When I was elected, out of 240 people, we had 12 PCs for the entire office.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had to you can't ask people to work better or harder if you don't give them a good work environment. So mm-hmm. I completely renovated all three floors of the county building, which mm-hmm. is my office, mm-hmm. put a PC on everyone's desk, mm-hmm. get a dedicated training room and so forth. So we've accomplished a lot of that with fewer staff mm-hmm. through technology. Mm-hmm. I've imaged about 25 million documents now, so you can access documents instead of through a file cabinet. You can do it online. Right. Two people can work on the same document at the same time. These mm-hmm. kinds of things improve things and just very basic changes in management.
Mm-hmm. Good. Larry, tell us how much of the property tax revenue that we generate here in the county stays in the county. First of all, how much do we generate?
We generate a little less than $4 billion a year.
$4 billion.
Yes.
Let me stop on that point. That's a lot of money, of course. It's probably a disproportionate share of the overall state revenues.
Yes. I should know what the total state revenue is. It's not the biggest source of revenue for anybody, but as I said, it's the most stable and also the largest share of discretionary revenue that local government has is the property tax.
Do you know how we stack up against other counties?
We are the sixth largest county in the state.
In terms of tax or population?
No, just in population.
Okay.
We have the fourth largest assessment roll, but we're number two in business personal property, which is computers, machinery, equipment, and so forth, because we're Silicon Valley.
Of course.
So that's kind of how we stack up statewide.
Right. All right. So the question is, we generate, you said, $4 billion.
Yeah.
How much of that stays here in the county?
A little less than half, about 48% of all property tax revenue generated in Santa Clara County goes to the state to fund public education.
Mm-hmm.
About 18% of it comes to the county itself to fund county programs.
Mm-hmm.
About 14% goes to the 15 cities in the county. It varies, and don't ask me why. I don't know why. It has to do with some formula that existed before Proposition 13. Mm-hmm. But about 14% of the property tax revenue goes to local government in terms of cities.
Uh-huh.
About 10%, I believe it is, goes to redevelopment agencies,
mm-hmm.
7% to community colleges, and 6% to special districts like the water district and the fire districts and so forth.
Do you mind me asking, when you say it goes to cities or it goes to special districts, do you mean that it goes directly there, or is it routed through Sacramento first and then redistributed?
The only part that is routed through Sacramento is the education component. For the most part, there's something called basic aid school districts, mm-hmm. which we have 11 to 13 of them, mm-hmm. varies here in Santa Clara County, where the money goes directly from the county assessor or tax collector the revenue part of it goes directly to the schools. The rest of it goes to Sacramento to fund public education and then is distributed statewide to schools.
I think listeners might be curious just to know exactly how it really works. We send checks, right? People write a check. There's a credit card option even. So there you are. You're collecting all of this. Well, actually, let me stop there. You don't actually collect.
Right.
Your role is to assess.
Right.
So, all right. So back up a step. Who actually collects?
There's a tax collector by state law in every county.
Right.
And the tax collector takes our values. Our values mean the assessor's values. And calculates the tax that's due and sends out the tax bills, which they just did this week.
Yes, they did.
And then collects the money. So that's more of a ministerial position. But it's, most people don't know that the tax collector is different than the assessor. And, in fact, by state law, the tax collector cannot be the same as the assessor or vice versa.
Who's our tax collector?
Martha Williams is our tax tax collector. Now, in some counties, the tax collector is an elected position. In our county, it's not. There's three countywide elected officials by state law in every county: the sheriff, the district attorney, and the assessor. In some counties, the registrar of voters elected, the tax collector is elected, the recorder's elected. But in our county, we only have the three that are required by state law.
Who appointed Martha Williams?
Works for the finance director who works for the county executive.
Gotcha. Okay, so Martha Williams collects all of this money. She receives it by people putting checks in envelopes. Yeah. And then she has to make a transaction with the state. Is this all just done electronically?
The money then goes through the finance department, and there's an allocation process that they distribute the money, if you will, as it's collected. So the basic sequence is this. There's a change of ownership or new construction. There's a deed.
Yes.
Comes to the assessor's office. We process the deed. We determine whether that transaction is reassessable or not, because some transactions are not reassessable. If you change from in your name to a trust, that's a non-reassessable thing, but it still results in a deed. Then goes to the assessor's office, who does an appraisal, determines the value, sends that value to the tax collector. The tax collector calculates the tax due on that, sends the bill out to, and then collects the money from the taxpayer.
Gotcha. So are there ways to legally avoid reassessment?
Yes, there is. There are a number of initiatives that passed since Proposition 13 that provide additional property tax benefits to taxpayers. There's a parent to child exemption. In other words, you can transfer your existing assessment, which oftentimes is very low if you've owned your property for a long time, between parents and children and keep your old assessed value. You got to be over the age of 55 and it has to be between parent and child, or child and parent. You can go either way. So people, elderly folks, or if they pass away, can take a $200,000 assessment on a house that's worth $1 million and transfer that to their children without being reassessed. There is what we call Proposition 60 and 90. If you're over the age of 55 again, you can transfer your existing assessment to another home in Santa Clara County. As long as that the home you buy is not more than 105% of the one you sell. So you may have a $100,000 assessment on a house that's worth $800,000. You can buy one at 105% of $800,000 and carry that $100,000 assessment with you if you're over the age of 55. Both of these things require an application.
Okay.
And or Proposition 90 allows you to do it with a very few counties. You could transfer your assessed value to another county under the same terms as Proposition 60.
Gotcha. Folks, you're listening to Larry Stone. He's the Santa Clara County Assessor. We're talking about the tax system and how it works in our county and the central role that it plays in the Silicon Valley ecosystem. We're going to go to break. So you're listening to Inside Silicon Valley. I'm your host, Russell Hancock. Stay right where you are. When we return, we'll conclude our conversation with Larry Stone. Welcome back. This is Inside Silicon Valley, and I'm your host, Russell Hancock. I'm the president CEO of Joint Venture Silicon Valley. And every week, our organization teams up with KLIV to bring you this program. It's a program about public affairs and the policy issues that are driving the Silicon Valley economy. So today we're talking with Santa Clara County Assessor Larry Stone. This has been a lively conversation, Larry, about tax and the role that you play in the collection of taxes and the assessment of properties. Our listeners are curious. How did you find yourself in this position? Of course, you were elected. We know that. But what was your career path? And what led you to think, oh, yeah, I want to be a county assessor?
Well, that was very late in the career that I decided that. In fact, I'm not sure why I did. But at any rate, I grew up in Seattle, Washington. I grew up in a very political family. Went to the University of Washington. And when I got out of grad school, I went back to New York and worked on Wall Street. I got transferred out to San Francisco. This is a long time ago, in the late 60s.
Okay.
And when I lived in New York, I was single. I lived on the east side of Manhattan. I had a two-bedroom, two-bath apartment that I shared with another guy. And I came out to San Francisco, got married, and had a small baby. And they said, okay, it's time to come back to Wall Street. And so I didn't want to do that because I knew it would be a different lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And so I met a couple of guys, and we started our own business. And we were the first tenant at 3000 Sand Hill Road, which is ground zero for venture capitalists.
Sure.
This was 1970. So I've been in the real estate investment development business for about 38 years, first as a syndicator and then as a developer. I ran for city council in the city of Sunnyvale and was elected mm-hmm. in 1975 and spent 16 years as a council member and a mayor mm-hmm. in Sunnyvale. Decided that was it for politics. And mm-hmm. And Al Carlson, my predecessor, decided to retire, and a couple of friends of mine, not many, but a couple called me and said, you know, one, Larry, you understand politics. Two, you understand real estate.
Yes.
Why don't you run for this? And because I love politics and I love to run for office, there's some that say I'd rather run than serve, but don't tell anybody that.
Okay.
I love running for office, and so I decided to do it. I was elected in 1994, took office January 1st, 1995, mm-hmm. And have been elected, I'm in my fifth term.
Yep. And you're not term limited.
No. The three county-wide elected officials by state law in every county, the sheriff, the district attorney, and assessor, mm-hmm. Don't have any term limits. There's a reason for that. You know, I've been a mayor and a council member, so I'm a policy maker. Mm-hmm. My job now is really as a manager, mm-hmm. And it's important to have the continuity of management. I don't make decisions from the dais or mm-hmm. determine those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I manage a relatively small by county standards, but a very important office, mm-hmm. and it takes that kind of continuity of management that every business would understand. So that's why those three positions are not term limited. And if there were term limits, you'd have to do it statewide. You couldn't do it county by county.
Uh-huh.
The assessor is elected mm-hmm. for only one reason that I can see, mm-hmm. but it's a very good one, and that is to make sure the assessor is independent of the people that spend the money.
Uh-huh.
If I work for the Board of Supervisors or the county executive who works mm-hmm. for the Board of Supervisors, mm-hmm. and I reduce the assessed value on 124,000 properties proactively, mm-hmm. took $26 billion off the assessment roll to reflect the declining market, as we did this year alone. If I worked for the Board of Supervisors, I'd probably be in some unemployment line right now.
Yeah, you sure would. So we understand the importance. Tell us the lessons that you brought with you to your current position from city government?
Very good question. The city of Sunnyvale is a very well-run city. Bill Clinton came out at my invitation to kick off the National Performance Review, which was the federal government's mm-hmm. approach to performance measurement and management, and declared the city of Sunnyvale the best-run government in America.
I remember.
And so I learned a lot mm-hmm. about how to apply business principles and controls and management to a governmental agency, which is a lot different than business. Mm-hmm. It's much more difficult. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I was first elected, we were prohibited by union contract from evaluating the performance of 85% of the people that worked in my office.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
It took me 10 years to change that policy through mm-hmm. labor negotiations. Mm-hmm. So now everybody in my office is evaluated. I only mention that because you can see the tremendous constraints that you have in government.
Yes.
That's kind of what we did. And I mm-hmm. think it took me longer than I thought it would. Everything seems to happen in government longer than you think, to try to really instill government principles. I have a very effective and sophisticated, by government standards at least, cost accounting system where I can tell you the cost of everything we do, a residential appraisal, an audit of a major corporation, a commercial industrial appraiser, everything we do fully loaded with the cost and the overhead and the benefits and the average revenue each of those generates. So when we do a class one audit of Cisco mm-hmm. or Intel or, yes. or HP or whatever mm-hmm. it is, I know the cost of that audit on average, and on average the revenue that it generates, mm-hmm. Which is we're the only people in the state that have that kind of sophisticated cost accounting system.
That's a fact. Larry, would you tell us some of the common myths about property taxes?
Well, the biggest one, and I see this a lot, the biggest one is really you can remodel your house, mm-hmm. tear it all down, and leave one wall standing, and you won't be reassessed. And mm-hmm. I see that. You drive around once in a while, particularly during the good times around here economically, yes. and there were a lot of people that were doing remodels and so forth to their homes, and you'd see one wall standing. When there's something in the law called substantially equivalent to new.
Okay.
So if you remodel your house, mm-hmm. I did a major remodel about 10 years ago on my house, mm-hmm. gutted the kitchen, gutted the master bath, mm-hmm. those kinds of things, made it substantially better, new mm-hmm. appliances, new mm-hmm. new fixtures, all that kind of stuff. But I added square footage, so I was reassessed to my existing assessment mm-hmm. the fair market value of the square footage I added. Mm-hmm. So you can do that kind of – if you tear your house down to the stud walls where you mm-hmm. can see through it,
yep.
then there's something in the law called substantially equivalent to new. Mm-hmm. And we will reassess that as a new house. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the land won't be reassessed. Mm-hmm. If there's plumbing that stays mm-hmm. and electrical that stays, mm-hmm. then, of course, we'll give you credit for that. So people believe if they tear their house down and leave a single wall, that's non-reassessable. Mm-hmm. Total nonsense. Never happens. Uh-huh. It's a complete myth. Mm. And yet people believe that. Somebody told me you may be able to avoid school fees and that kind of thing if you do that. I don't know if that's true or not, but the assessor will get you.
Okay. Larry Stone, what happens when the market value falls below my purchase price?
Proposition 13 provides that if the market value drops below your assessed value, mm-hmm. then the assessor is required to reduce the assessment to reflect the lower market value for that year.
Hmm.
And so, and then to continue to review that assessment, and if it continues to drop as it has been doing in this significant market decline,
right.
to reduce it each year.
Mm-hmm.
That's called Proposition 8, which passed 6 months after Proposition 13 in 1978.
Oh.
But when the market turns around, and we believe it will because it always has, mm-hmm. when is mm-hmm. the question,
right.
then the assessor is also required to restore that assessed value, mm-hmm. not subject to the 2% cap, until the market value gets back up to what we call the factored base year value, which is the purchase price. Increase by no more than 2% a year. Mm-hmm. And then all the protections of Proposition 13 kick back in.
Mm-hmm.
So not right now, and I think I just mentioned that we proactively reduced the assessed value on 124,000 properties, nearly one quarter of all properties in this county, reduced the assessed value to reflect the declining market. Mm-hmm. Residential properties, commercial properties, all kinds of properties are subject to this, and took $26 billion, reduced the assessment roll by $26 billion to reflect that. And so that substantial reduction in revenue to the county and to those that benefit from property tax revenue. When the market turns around, we hope it will, mm-hmm. We will be in the process of restoring those values until they get back up to their purchase price.
Hmm. listeners, you're listening to Larry Stone. He's a Santa Clara County assessor. I'm Russell Hancock, your host. This is Inside Silicon Valley. So talking about market turnarounds, this is a very bad and tempestuous economy causing record foreclosures in our county. Would you say something about the impact of those foreclosures on assessed value and your ability to do your job?
Well, the difference between this downturn and previous downturns that we've had is that we haven't had record foreclosures like we have now. In normal times, and this is clearly not normal times, a foreclosure was an aberration. It was somebody that got strung out, they got ill, they lost their job, whatever. Mm-hmm. The assessor would ignore a foreclosure because it wasn't an arm's length transaction. There was enough regular transactions to determine the assessed value of property. There's so many foreclosures, particularly in Gilroy, Morgan Hill, mm-hmm. East San Jose, mm-hmm. and to a certain extent, Milpitas, that the assessor can't ignore that because they are the market. And of course, this has a much long-lasting effect because when you take a property. I talked to a taxpayer, a homeowner the other day, who bought a condo that was previously assessed around $600,000. The bank foreclosed on that condo, and we reduced the assessed value to the bank to mm-hmm. reflect the market value of $250,000. He bought it for $190,000.
Hmm.
So that's a new base year value.
Mm-hmm.
So when the market turns around, we will not be able to recapture the assessed value from $600,000 that we lost because it's a transaction.
Mm-hmm.
During normal times, when the market dropped, people just took their property off the market,
right.
and didn't enter into a transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the market turned around, we would restore that back to what it was. So the lasting impact of this downturn is going to be significantly greater on local government revenues, particularly property tax revenues, than previous downturns that we've experienced.
So give us your prescription. Given this reality and its harsh impact on cities and their fiscal condition, how are we going to save cities?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the most insidious part of Proposition 13 was the two-thirds requirement for local residents to
yes.
pass increases in taxes to support their schools mm-hmm. or their cities
mm-hmm.
or what they want to see.
It is essentially established minority rule.
Right. It really is. I believe that the only thing that should be two-thirds vote requirement mm-hmm. are national treaties with foreign countries.
Uh-huh.
We ought to have a majority rule.
Mm-hmm.
50% plus one should decide what we do. That makes it very difficult for people to vote to increase revenue and support for their schools or other types of things.
Hmm. Larry Stone, we're actually bumping up against the end of the hour, so we only have time for one or two more questions. Tell us, just remind our listeners quickly, what are the important deadlines and dates?
The deadlines and dates are we value property as of January 1st of each year.
Mm-hmm.
We close the assessment roll on July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
The tax bills go out, as they did this week, at the end of September, early October.
Mm-hmm.
The first payment date of your first installment is December the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
The second payment date is April the 10th
mm-hmm.
of each year.
Mm-hmm.
Assessment appeals. If you believe you're over-assessed, then you have an option, one, to go online and ask our office to do an informal review. We do those reviews between July 1st and September 15th, which is the deadline to file an assessment appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Do not miss that appeal date, because mm-hmm. if you do, there's nothing that we can do about that.
Uh-huh.
If you're over-assessed, appraisal is more an art than it is a science. We
yes.
do make mistakes. We do over-assess folks, and we want to know about it. The job of the assessor is to put the accurate value on the roll, whatever it is, up or down, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we're being driven by appeals. We're normally used to getting 3,000 to 4,000 appeals. We've got 12,000 appeals to reflect the declining market.
Mm.
In 2010, got 9,000 last year, and it looks like we're going to have about 8,000 this year as of the appeal filing deadline is September 15th.
Hmm. Well, Larry, thank you. It's been an enlivening hour. You've been listening to Larry Stone on Inside Silicon Valley. Larry is the Santa Clara County Assessor, and we've been talking about tax and the way it's collected and processed and the role that it plays in Silicon Valley's ecosystem. I'm your host, Russell Hancock. We hope that you'll join us again next week for another exciting edition of Inside Silicon Valley. That'll be right here on KLIV 1590.